Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. Here I'm joined by an interesting soul for snacks and sometimes full-blown banquets. We share conversation and confessions, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello, lovely faces. I think what we've got here might be the most pressing and important hoovering I've done in some time, and it's really fun and funny and delicious. I'm joined by brilliant environmental journalist and author of Avocado Anxiety, a former guest returning years later, it's Louise Gray. If you give even the faintest of solitary fucks about the planet, or if you care even the tiniest amount about eating in a way that mitigates, the increasingly terrifying climate crisis, then this is the episode for you. First up, I'd like to thank you if you came to see me hoover live with Joe Lycett at the Roundhouse Comedy Festival. What an absolute beaut. I've got other national treasures in the diary to hoover with soon as well, you lucky bisms. Right, want to know how to get discount tickets to live shows like that one with Joe Lycett, and indeed early and ad-free editions of every single episode? Well, you can become my patron. Patreon is the only reason this podcast can exist, and we're in need of growing it. So I've really spiced up what my patrons get in exchange for as little as £2 a month. All sorts, including tons of exclusive content. If you've got anything at all going spare on the money front, then have a peep. It's patreon.com/thehooveringpod. Haven't got any spare wedge, that is also fine. Just make sure you've given us a big, slutty, 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts from, and maybe tell one other bastard about the Hoovering podcast this week, or do an Instagram post or a tweet about it. Thank you, thank you. So, let's get into this incredible episode. Louise is so lovely and fun and engaging, and her latest book blew my socks off, as you'll hear. It's an honour to talk to someone with so much really current expertise on the environmental impact of our food systems and how we eat, who is also full of so many sort of positive, applied, practical and affordable solutions to the current problems. This isn't a doom and gloom episode by any means. You're just in for a treat, basically. Louise is based in Scotland, but I was lucky enough to catch her during a trip to London, and she brought some lunch round to my garden on so many levels. Lucky me. Should we just tuck in?
Yes.
Thank you for bringing. Well, I'll let you say what it is.
I've bought some fava bean hummus, which we have souped up a bit with melted butter and pistachio nuts.
Oh, not just any melted butter. You've made it what, biscuity?
Yes.
You've got to melt it till it's gone biscuity.
Yeah, till it's gone a bit brown, and then
is it called a beurre noisette?
Oh, I don't know.
Isn't that where make it go nutty? But that might be I feel like that's maybe a level up from biscuiting.
I don't know, but I got the recipe from Jenny Chandler, who's excellent. Well, it's her recipe with chickpea hummus, I think.
Okay.
But she writes about pulses, and she recommended it to me. And she's like, cook the butter till that has foxy brown bits in it.
Oh, foxy brown!
And it smells biscuity. But I couldn't see in your kitchen what was foxy brown.
No, I've got a very dark kitchen, so we're going to have to have somewhere between nutty and foxy.
And then Ikavado spread, which is broad beans and just a little bit of peas to sweeten it.
Oh.
And that's a kind of uber hipster alternative to avocado on toast. And it, I mean, you could argue it's more eco because it can be locally sourced, but yeah, you know, we can discuss that.
We can,
you know,
get into that.
I don't know,
because it's the theme of your latest book, which I've really loved. I've just sort of done the best hosting I've ever done. I've just been sorting myself out food wise while you spoke there.
And thank
your
you.
Turn.
And some bread.
I've really made sure that I'm okay.
Yeah.
I've contributed relatively little.
Olives in the bread.
I've bought some bread from my local deli called Found Hope, which is so nice. And I think someone called Paul makes the bread, and it's my favourite bread, their bread. This one's like a seeded porridge sourdough.
Yum.
I know. Doesn't get more hipstery than that. And then a sourdough baguette full of massive olives.
Yeah, that's really good. Thank you.
Which does feel like actually perfect for these things, to flop these things, plop these, pop these things on, spread these things on, eat these things with.
Yes.
And I've put a few tomatoes in, and also, just as I need eating, some enormous halves of beetroot. I don't know if that interests you.
Always. But what I love about the broad Ikavado, it sounds a silly thing, but is it actually does look like avocado on toast, doesn't
it?
And you do
fresh
sort of
and
have
green
a.
And, lovely.
And if you enjoy avocado on toast, it does please you to eat something that looks like that snack. In fact,
oh,
even
totally. You do a lot of eating with our eyes.
And it's actually greener and fresher and.
Mm.
Yeah, should be yummy.
Oh my gosh. Whoa, I've gone straight in for the buttery fava bean hummus. Oh, I love it.
It's really nice because it's a bit more sort of creamy and beany than normal hummus, so butter is really good.
Oh my god,
and I
that's
find it
lovely.
Doesn't really work with like carrots and cucumber, like other hummus.
Oh, that you need to dip it in. Cause,
but it works really well with bread.
Bread,
I think.
Wow, I mean.
Yeah.
Love
and
an excuse not to have to muck about with carrots and cucumber when you could have bread. I had no idea before reading your book that these beans that we can grow here, fava beans, they like give back to the soil nitrogen.
Yeah, so fava beans or broad beans are the same.
Are they?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I think they can be like treated differently, but
okay.
But they're essentially
one
the
of
same.
Them's got a bit more privilege than the other.
Yeah.
But some of them are more likely to get into a Russell Group University.
I think they might be slightly different varieties.
Yeah.
But basically, we've been eating them in Britain forever. You know, they're really, and we used to eat a lot more beans, like peas porridge and stuff like that, in this country. But then when refrigeration came along, it became much cheaper to eat meat. And gruel or beans became less fashionable.
Right.
So we stopped eating them, but they're really good for us, you know, because protein and fibre and all the rest of it. But they're also good for the environment because they're a legume, and legumes, instead of, they fix nitrogen in the soil, so they have nodules on their roots, and they basically take nitrogen from the air and fix it in their roots in the soil, so they don't need nitrogen fertilizer. They don't need to get it from the soil. They can get it from the air. So that means farmers don't need to put nitrogen fertilizer on that crop. So if you use it as a break crop, it will.
And a break crop means something you plant in between crops of, for example, potatoes or carrots or whatever else you're growing.
We're on a comedy/eating podcast. We're talking about nitrogen and agriculture.
Yes. I made because one joke about universities, so it still counts as comedy, okay?
Yeah.
If you're listening thinking, like, this sounds serious, but buckle in. There'll be a joke every 20 minutes. Absolute promise.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, that's really exciting. Most people are like, oh my God. But it is nitrogen.
Comedy schmomedy. We're just two passionate women talking about eating. End of.
Nitrogen cycles, carbon cycles, water cycles. I get really into them in the book. Anyway, they can use them as a break crop, and it means they're using less nitrogen fertilizer.
Yeah.
But what I love about it is, if you want to visualize it, is, you know, driving through the countryside and you'd see like a field of oilseed rape. In the future, you might see some different colors in there because they don't even need to put strips of the legumes. They could put, you know, fava bean crop sprinkled in.
Right.
And then, you know, it still reduces the need for nitrogen fertilizer. Mm. And then you have another crop because the combine harvester can tell the difference. So it's a really good example of, you know, how diversity in a crop can be good for the environment and good for our health as well.
Big time.
Yeah.
And it comes down, doesn't it, to, I learnt this from your book. It's like, I feel so grateful to have learnt this from your book. We popularise things, and that kind of, it's just part of human nature that things come in and out of fashion a little
Absolutely,
bit.
Absolutely, yeah.
But we, I think in terms of, if people who want to eat in a way that, if you care about the environment, and there are so many people who desperately do, you know, within the boundaries of what they could do without getting anxious or stressed out and or what they can afford. I think that's like the vast majority of people, certainly that I talk to anyway on the podcast and in my life, want to do this. I think don't necessarily know. And actually, you just get, because if something's fashionable, it suddenly becomes readily available. The one type of beans that we all have all the time is Heinz baked beans. Like that one type
of,
we all think, if you think of beans, you think of that.
Yeah.
But actually, they are actually readily available and cheaply. So many beans.
Yeah, yeah. If you look, it's beautiful. If you look at Hobmadod's website, they've got loads.
Yeah, this company sound like they. Did you say
they're
they had a, like a mega boost in the lockdown?
Yes, they completely sold out during the lockdown.
Wow.
Because store cupboard staple to fill your cupboard full of dried pulses.
Yeah.
The cat's coming in for some fava bean hummus. That's how good it is.
Yeah, but basically, popularised it with cats.
Yeah, yeah. But it's interesting.
It's
like
so delicious. I think as well, sometimes people think this is going to be like some whole foodie excuse for the real thing.
Yeah.
I'm having a culinarily fucking sexy time. Like, it's so yummy. I'm not lacking for anything.
Yeah.
I don't think that I can happily swap these things for those things. Or go one in five times, I'll have avocados then.
Yeah, yeah, which is the idea. And I think, so first thing, just on beans, you can get a bit, go a bit crazy about beans, like to the extent, you know, they send them into war zones.
Whoa.
Because when they're dried, they don't go off. You can feed a lot of people. The UN has like a pulses day, you know.
Wow.
Like, they're trying, like,
the day of the pulse.
Yeah, globally there is a drive to bring more pulses into our lives, for the environment, for development. So when you get into pulses, you find yourself, like, you do think, am I going mad? You're like, God, pulses could save the world.
That is amazing.
But you don't get many moments like that as an environmental journalist. Like, you can...
Really?
Well, as in...
That black and can, white, this
well,
is good.
Well, no, it can get a bit depressing.
Yeah.
You know, that's really why I'm in food,
because
what other options do you have to not even change, but to kind of try and be better?
Yeah.
You know, and food is a really good one. It can, and even with food, like, it's very hard to be perfect.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when you have a story, which is...
Well, impossible.
Which makes it, yeah, exactly. Well, of course, yeah. But when you have something that can help, that is cheap and yummy and good for the environment,
yeah,
you jump on it. Because,
well, it's one of the many things that I loved about the book, is that it's packed with, I mean, let's face it, like, quite depressing thorough facts in terms of like what the impact of feeding all the people on the planet is and increasingly is going to be like as our population grows. But I didn't come away from it sad or anxious. You sort of apologised for that at the end of the book. And actually, I felt nothing but empowered. You give really clear ways without people having to spend a load of money, even to be able to afford bougie veg boxes and all of that stuff. It's full of really good practical ways to change a few habits here and there. And at no point did I come away thinking, well, I can't do all of that. There are loads of tiny things to do and they'll all add up.
That's great, because that's what it's about, that avocado anxiety that we all feel, to try and, like, make people feel better about it. Because I've written about this, about how anxiety just makes you treat your body badly with food.
Yes.
You know, I've written about bulimia, but then, you know, even, like, other eating disorders or just being miserable.
Yeah.
It doesn't work, does it?
Well, it doesn't lead you to go like, oh, I'm going to take real care and spend time cooking and see how what I eat makes me feel. And all of that hard stuff.
And it so interests me that humans are we're so greedy. You know, lots of people, like writers, Jonathan Safran Foer has admitted, he wrote a really great book called Eating Animals. It's amazing, about being vegan. But then he has acknowledged that he was never completely vegan, because he'd break down somewhere.
Yeah,
and,
that's,
and it's not criticism of him. It's
it's like absolutism doesn't work for almost all people.
And if you're going to be a writer, you have to be truthful to be any good. So, you know, like, you've got to work with human nature.
Jay Rayner has a book called Greedy Man in a Hungry World. I think that's a really great title. And it's a really good book.
It is a good book.
It is a good book.
He does a great description of his own thighs.
Does he? I've forgotten that. I love it. He's funny.
And what I loved about it is so few men do that, and they're increasingly doing it. You're noticing it in Ravenous, a book by Henry Dimbleby.
Yes, I
in
need
so
to read that.
Many books right now.
Yeah,
and women did it earlier because there's more pressure on them. But even now, men writing books about food talk about their own body image, which I think is a very welcome thing.
It is a very welcome thing. Although, also apparently, like disordered eating is like massively on the rise in straight white men, like in
of
ridiculous
course it would
numbers.
Be. Look at what their role models are.
I know, but part of me now is like, fuck, that's not the equality we wanted. Yeah. I don't want, we can't all be sad and obsessed with our bodies. Like, that's not what I wanted. I wanted us to have the freedom of men that don't spend their adolescence at least stressing over the consequences of everything they consume. Actually, like, I think it's where your book toes the line so beautifully. It's like, it wouldn't exist if you weren't concerned about the impact of how you eat or how humans eat affects our planet and the future of our planet. But there is only so much you can hand over in terms of your daily thoughts and feelings on the topic. It's so easy to become obsessed and stressed about what you're eating, whether it's about the planet, whether it's about your body, whether it's about weight, whether it's about fitness, health.
Yeah.
There's a million different ways to get...
And then eating becomes a way of dealing with the stress.
Yeah, totally.
And then makes the stress worse and the whole thing. So I think it's really interesting how they're connected, and so a few people would talk about that, about food and environment is connected, but I've kind of like gone a bit further than that, because as soon as I start writing about food, I start feeling all the emotions I feel about food, you know, so I've tried to bring that in as well.
I love it, and I think you've succeeded.
Oh, great.
And I think, like,
I've
with avocado...
I've got to tell you more about beans.
Yes, okay,
just
one
last
more
thing.
About beans.
See, this is what happens with beans. But basically, it's not just humans, it's animals. Like, GM soy is what's destroying the rainforests. A big problem with deforestation is growing GM soy.
And is that a type of soy that feeds animals?
Exactly.
That we're growing to eat?
Yeah, and we could be feeding animals.
So every time, like, someone who hates vegans says... But all the soy you're growing.
That's
to feed
nonsense.
The animals you're eating.
Yeah, GM soy is feeding animals. I'm afraid vegans is a complete red herring. They're eating nice organic soy that's not hurting anybody. Sorry.
No, I'm not sorry.
But well sorry, done, sorry, angry Telegraph reader. Yes. That's not going to work. But basically, what would work is if we fed more fava beans and things to animals in this country, you know, rather than...
And that would do the job of GM soy.
Yeah,
in terms
protein,
of the animal nutrition. Really? Yeah. Fuck me. Yeah. Let's
we could
just
do
it
lot,
then, shall
a
we?
A lot more plant protein could be
Who
fed
do we lobby?
Well, the Sustainable Food Trust or somebody did a report recently, Farmers, NFU. Right. Though I did a talk with Farmers Weekly, which I was really proud of because my dad read
Farmers Weekly. Yes, of course you brought up farming.
But they did boo me because I said...
Whoa.
I said, of course, you know, an avocado has a lower carbon footprint than beef. And they were booing me.
Oh, fuck.
But it was good for me. It was good for me because my audience are usually like a woke audience going, yes, of course, you know, I'm, you know... I feel
not already preaching to the converted here.
Yeah, exactly. And it made
me
realise...
You're just stating a fact.
Exactly, but it made me realise how threatened the farming world feels. Yeah. And these are people providing our food, so it was quite good for me. It was
good.
That, you know, because
like that.
We've
these
got butter in this meal, you know, they like...
I mean, I'm just slapping
and
it on
and we like butter. So,
light doesn't cover it for
me.
No. I've double buttered. I've just buttered the bread that I'm dipping in my decorated faba beans.
Yeah. So, I don't know what I'm trying to say, except for I love farmers, and I don't want to upset them. I want to bring everyone in on
but
the conversation.
Also, it has become a little bit binary on that front, I think.
Yes.
And there's like, you know, they'll be reading a narrative that supports their bias, etc. It's very hard to move out of a world where you're not just confirming.
And
your
it's
own
used.
Bias,
I'm noticing it's being used in the same way. Like I was reporting on climate change from 2008 when, for the Telegraph, you know, when there was a lot of like reporting of people questioning whether it exists, which was a bit of a waste of everybody's time.
Yeah.
we could have been talking about what we do, but anyway. I did report on that, and I feel like we're sort of doing the same at the moment. There's a lot of media stuff about, look at these terrible vegans trying to take away our burgers, and like, I don't think that's a bit of a waste of time. Why don't we just talk about how we can make the food system more sustainable? There's a lot of a binary dialogue around food, but we are all greedy little humans.
Yeah.
And we're all just all greedy little humans trying to do our best.
Yeah. Well, totally. What that leads to is the next thing I want to bring up, which was I've got a list of revelations I had from the book.
And one revelations, of them, I love.
Yes, that I want to get into
feels
more.
Feels good.
What I hadn't done before the book is look at where food that I eat comes from in terms of the impact in a really holistic way. I mean, you get into in a lot of depth in the book, and it's so interesting how kind of one of the things that we've got a little bit, that's got a bit zeitgeisty, basically, is to potentially demonise food that's come from far away and to prioritise local food. And again, that's also been given quite a lot of shade the other way because so many people aren't in a situation financially, educationally, physically to do that. They haven't got the time, money, energy to set up their own garden allotment. Skills. I've tried growing veg in my garden and ended up stopping because it just wasn't, I didn't have the time and the money to make the, it just wasn't practical.
I did, at the beginning of the book, I was like, in each chapter I will grow the vegetable and I would tell the story of my conversion to an earth mother.
Yeah.
And then I realised I'm not an earth mother, I'm just a very bad gardener. It's really not that interesting, me killing things.
Yeah.
But I do have it on one chapter about mental health because I did enjoy it, but I just didn't. I didn't eat that much of it.
It's really, it's lovely for people who are that way inclined and can make that leap to go, right, I'm going to grow all my own plants to eat. 99.99999% of people, that is not going to happen for anymore. That's not necessarily a practical
solution. I think it will happen
to
us when we're older, Jess.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I feel like I'm not ready. I feel I'm too angry and impatient. And I feel, and when I go to the allotment, everyone's a bit more zen and older, and I'm thinking, I'll get there.
Do you think it's it'll like be yoga around the same time that we start being able to do there cryptic crosswords?
Yes, exactly. And like not get angry in yoga. I like yoga, but sometimes...
It does make you angry.
Sometimes.
That's, I love that. That's
sometimes great. I'm like, relax, Louise!
I told you to relax!
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, and I just sit there and think, it'll come.
Yeah.
With the allotment.
Yeah.
And the cryptic like crossword.
Old Rose, yeah. Come. I am not there yet. I'm still doing much more angry sports because I'm really owning the anger.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I loved about the holistic approach, which I hadn't been thinking about, was not only if, like, perhaps it's overly simplistic, I learnt to say, well, we shouldn't have green beans from Kenya because that's far away, because actually if you're looking at where food comes from holistically, you're looking at a lot more things than that, including the nutrition of the food, compared to what other alternative local available things, the nutrition for the people who are growing it, the standards of labour and pay and quality of life for the people growing it. And then what I hadn't even considered, and there's so many ways where the carbon impact of a local version might sometimes be worse because it's come perhaps from somewhere closer in Europe but in a big diesel truck, as opposed to coming in such huge quantities in the belly of a plane from someone who has had their life, community, family's life, whole area transformed economically by growing that crop in Africa, that it's a game changer. There's so much more to it, and it can be really short-sighted to say, well, it's come from somewhere far away, I shouldn't eat it, when actually, if it's possible to get access to the bigger picture, it might still be the best thing to do for the planet, or seasonally.
The statistics are really blunt. If you're worried about green beans from Kenya, it's like fruit and vegetables flown in from Africa, like 0.1 or 0.01. I have to check the book. But it's a really tiny, tiny proportion of your overall carbon footprint, and you probably would generate more if you drove in a, you know, diesel car to the supermarket. And then on the other hand, sub-Saharan Africa makes millions of pounds from export horticulture, and that's still a small proportion of the food, so the food's not coming out away from hungry people. It's just generating a lot of cash, which means farmers can develop. And it's been run by, you know, as often in this job, it's a little bit like, we probably won't get into GM, but often you're interviewing a GM scientist and someone who's spent their whole career developing plants to feed hungry people, and you're thinking, oh, GM, but who's a better person in this room? And it's the same with Farm Africa, a really excellent charity, and we give them money through the government, through international development, to help farmers in Africa develop export horticulture. So it was really hard writing that chapter because it's easier to have a conclusion at the end of the chapter. And it was hard, that one, because food miles it's not a huge part of your carbon footprint. But if we're going for net zero and air freight is increasing, then we still have to look at it, you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't know, I suppose it's, much of it is instinctive to me because it's, you know, free market and world trade and... Do we really want to limit ourselves?
Yeah,
I, do say at the end, though, I do say at the end, local and seasonal where you can, because I think it connects you to the environment.
Yeah.
And that was the really interesting thing. There's a, when food miles kicked off in the 90s, which was really well meant, and you can understand why, people were walking to the supermarket and seeing green beans from Kenya and nothing from their local farmers, and the local farmers are going out of business.
Yes.
And it led to things like the Fife diet, where people are only eating within 100 miles.
Mm-hmm.
But those things, they did good work, but they didn't last that long. And when they came to the end of it, what people really said they loved the most was the connection to the countryside, the connection to farmers, how they ate, the, how they enjoyed their food.
Yes.
So I kind of feel like the argument for local should, you don't need to have carbon. Like, just do it because it feels good. Like, you've talked about your local baker already.
No. Yeah, you can take...
And Hodmadod's is from Suffolk, where I grew up. And, peas and broad beets. It's like, it's a good feeling.
Oh, there is no
But a squeeze of lemon on it is bloody nice.
Other than herbs. But even then, I do think, fucking yum, yum. Like, if I go, even if I manage to grow the mint in that, or the thyme in that, it's like, it's a it just feels great. And you can do those things on a... window ledge. So, oh no, I hear you. Like, I bought some strawberries today because they were, well, I mean, they were bloody expensive, but because they said they're from down the road and they look there and it's incredible colour. But, like, it does bring you joy. It does connect
and,
you to
And I talk about that in the seasonality chapter, in the, and I love this about food. Like, it can really take you back, you know, and that's such a beautiful thing, you know, and there's a lot of... talk at the moment about Huel and food, which will give us a perfect amount of nutrition in a shake.
But I'd rather just be dead.
I'd rather eat a really terrible cheese sandwich from the BP garage
every day.
It's more interesting.
Oh, so it's like, every day.
So it's about that. We'll get back to the beginning of our conversation. Like, you can look at the statistics of food and say, "Oh well, food miles don't matter. Let's just not worry about local and seasonal." But then you live in a desert of food.
Yeah.
You're not growing any. You're not having that connection. So there are other reasons that it's important as well.
Yeah. Oh gosh, totally.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, it's me interrupting this magical episode with Louise to peruse, well, it's one actually, but it's one mighty response from you to our listener question. It's the gift that keeps on giving. The listener question was, tell me about your holiday hoovering. It's the season, isn't it, for holidays? And I wanted to know anything interesting that you've eaten on a holiday. Now, oh my crumbs, this is this is a big deal. But I mean, this is sort of on me. It's sort of on me to express to you what a big deal this is. This came into the podcast's WhatsApp from a listener called Sarah McCallum, and it's pictures, and so I'm just going to have to react in a way that oh god. Okay, so let's read what she's written. She wrote, "Weirdest holiday food, but apparently it was good," in brackets. "We were in Iceland and my boyfriend insisted we go for dinner in a bus station IKEA style canteen, I don't know why I said contain. That's because I can't contain my emotions over the pictures she's sending, and not in a good way. An IKEA style canteen for, are you ready? Sheep's heads. Here are the photos, complete with content warning." Oh my god. Right, I need to not be as squeamish as I am feeling looking at these, because I think if you're going to eat meat, you should eat all the meat. But flip me, there is basically a sheep's head on a plate, but next to two balls, not testicles, but one I think is of like swede and one is of mashed potato. But they, do you remember when you were at school and your mash was dished up with an ice cream scoop? Did that happen at your school? That happened at my school and I'd forgotten that happened. But there's these two really clinical orbs of carb, like for children, next to the flayed head of an animal. And she sent one picture of it with all its, all the head there. And then one finished one. That's just the skeleton, but that's not what you call it, is it? You call it a skull. It almost looks like a beak. Oh god. And then there is a picture of the boyfriend eating a bit of the head. He's got his tongue out, but she's put an emoji over his face in case I found him. On behalf of all sheep, I'm afraid I cannot identify Sarah McCallum's boyfriend, and I cannot find him, and I cannot avenge you sheep. I'm so sorry. Well, emotions aside, on an intellectual level, I'm going to say well done. I believe in eating all of the animal. On an emotional level, I am repulsed. I don't know if I could do it. I'd have to be on the edge of death. I don't know if I could do that for fun. You are a bigger warrior adventurer than me, Sarah, and Sarah's partner, and you will survive much longer than me in any kind of apocalypse. So well done, and thank you so much for sharing. That was a really intense response. That's the only one I'm going to do this episode. I think I need to lie down. Please look on social media. It's at the Hoovering Pod. We're asking listener questions all the time. We love it when you voice note us or WhatsApp us or DM us your responses to the questions. At the moment, there's one flying around about things you've eaten on your birthday. Yeah, there we go. I don't want to know what Sarah McCollum's boyfriend has on his birthday. Let's get back into this lovely episode.
Next revelation.
It's quite biblical.
Yeah, sorry.
I came with a stone tablet.
We're moving through the revelations one by one. Start Gregorian chanting. I got this sense as well that perhaps, and maybe this is to do with, like, again, like not demonising the GM scientist who's trying to feed lots of people, but we also damn ourselves, I think, as humans by being obsessed with uniformity. We want familiarity and safety.
You know, when they study people when they go into supermarkets and they grab people on the outside and say, "Do you care about food miles?"
And they say, oh yeah.
And then they go in and they do everything on price and look and flavour. And so supermarkets, well, people, you'll always take the best stuff off the top.
Yeah.
So it does cause, we kind of do it to ourselves, but more so in this country. Other countries, people are more used to apples and pears being different shapes and sizes, and they seem to cope.
I think there's loads of tricks we could have. We could play tricks and do, if you put things in the discount aisle, then your people will take a wonky one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Just take one pee off Whoppens.
And I think a lot of it is how, it's just retailers being motivated by profits, you know, like how they, and I haven't made this book anti-supermarket because I shop at supermarkets, and when I manage to decouple myself from them, I'll tell you all how to do it. But I can't until I have.
Well, but this is it. It isn't necessarily an option for the vast majority of people.
Yeah,
to completely not use supermarkets. They're serving a purpose. It's about getting them to do it in the best possible way. So I had this amazing conversation with a communications organisation who specialise in talking to people with any sort of profile at all about how to talk about the climate crisis in a positive and useful way in their work. And I think it's one of the reasons I loved the book is because it was so hopeful. I came away feeling so empowered without being coy about the horror of the facts.
Yeah.
But it is possible to do more. And actually, like, there have been, I feel like, quite a few instances where, I mean, there's loads more work to do, but that actually one upside of supermarkets being financially motivated is they will listen to their customer base if their customer base are noisy enough.
Yes.
And if you say, I don't know, I'm not going to buy coffee here if you don't get a fair trade one, they've listened and they've got those things in, or they've got more available stuff that's not in packaging. Like, people are listening.
Yeah.
It's about making them listen and act faster and harder and more.
Yeah.
But it's not like an immovable object, like it feels like trying to persuade a government to do more. I think actually, in terms of how we get supermarkets to behave in better ways.
I definitely think so, because I feel like, I'm not saying it should be entirely consumer-led.
Or no.
A lot of people like to call people not consumers but food citizens.
Okay.
Because it gives you more power. And it was one of the things I was like that. When I started writing the book, I was like, I'm not going to use the word sustainable.
Oh, okay.
And then I did. But I was like, And then I was like, I'm not going to use the word sustainable. I'm going to call everybody food citizens. But then I just got myself in a bit of a muddle and ended up using those things. But I do like food citizens.
If I'm going to be a food citizen, I do want a uniform.
Yeah, and it did make me sound a bit of a plonker.
I think I don't just want a uniform, I want a woggle.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a food citizen.
So I put people back as consumers and said, you make all the change. But no, it's the food system. It's definitely government at the top. When you think about a big part of the book is, you know, the food system / consumers can make a difference. But it is about the whole food system. And when we were talking about food miles and the lovely idea of us all eating more local. So then we need more produce to be grown locally. And also I've talked about in one chapter we might not get into, chemical use and how we can grow fruit and veg better in this country.
Yeah.
But we need to actually grow it in this country. And that is about government helping and supporting farmers. And they've recently just scrapped a horticulture strategy. So there's definitely government.
You could argue that we overwhelmingly need a new
government. Yeah, but it is about government at the top. But I guess most people listening to this podcast aren't going to be sitting down and writing to their MP, but they are going to the supermarket this week. So it just gives people a bit more power.
Don't underestimate them.
Yeah, they can do both. And but yeah, so I do feel like we do have power, I think.
Yeah.
One of the few areas where we do.
Food waste bins.
Do you use yours?
Obsessively.
Yes.
But my partner, it makes her want to puke. And I have had to put one hell of a shift in. Please, mate. It was too
really
passive-aggressive of me.
It's quite a good example.
I took photographs of the pages in the book and was like, I don't think I can do it to the relationship. But eventually, I will have a... And I've been trying to, like, just sort of drop
but
in the reasons.
But this is so good. I'm so glad this is coming up
Could
in the podcast.
Could you please explain why it's so important that
but
we
I'm
use
so
our
glad
food
it's
because
coming...
I don't think people realise how fucking important it
it's
is.
It's so good because, again, when I work for a newspaper and radio, wrote some of the most even more questionable articles of my career. Like, I was writing about how, you know, there's a whole campaign led by someone called Doretta Cox.
Yeah.
And Doretta, she hates food waste bins. And she called them slop buckets.
Oh,
and,
my God, Doretta.
And she's in the Daily Mail and Telegraph saying these awful slop buckets. And maybe they did in her council area because it was done badly.
Fuck's sake, it's a bit of a mess. Oh. Like, also, if it's that filthy, clean it out more often.
Yeah, or tea tree oil on the lid.
Just give it a scrub. Grow up. You wipe your own arse every day. Clean your food bin. Come on. I haven't got time for it. But also, I think sometimes people don't understand why it's so important, so I'll leave that to you.
So, that's what I said initially in the chapter, what you've just said.
Right, and then you really
And then I thought, there's going to be people who are really worried about worms and flies and things. And there are ways around that. But the reason it's so important is, after less meat, reducing food waste is the next most important thing you can do if you want to bring the food section of your carbon footprint.
Yeah.
And some statistics is, yes, you know, if emissions from food waste was a country, it would be the world's biggest emitter after the US and China.
Whoa!
And a third of the food we eat gets wasted. So it's a huge amount of waste, because it's not just... It's the fact that if we throw it in landfill, it turns it's methane.
Yeah.
And that's a greenhouse gas. But it's also the problem, like, that was land where potentially... was deforested to grow that food,
yeah.
Or there was energy used, and there are still hungry people. You know, yeah. It's a moral argument as well.
I think I hadn't realised the impact that when you think. I think everybody knows that food waste is shit for the planet, but I love those stats about quite how extraordinarily shit for the planet it is. And I hadn't understood the practical reasons why. And it's twofold, isn't it? With using your food waste benefits an option for you. On the one hand, food waste that goes into general. Waste goes into your general bin, then creates gases that are so shit for the planet. And also, if you're not washing out, you're recycling, then that can't be recycled. But what I hadn't realised as well is that food waste that you do put in your food waste bin, they use it to create like an enormous, gross industrial stomach somewhere,
yes,
that makes energy.
Yeah, I went to see it, and the guy described it to me. He's just like the way he described it was like, it's like your stomach. And it's producing a massive fart,
yeah,
but that then you can be burned, like gas. It's a gas. So
incredible.
In Wales, everyone in Wales uses their food, yep, but it's 90%, and it's really great. So when I'm
oh
not being
God,
booed,
even the Welsh water system is extraordinary as well. Yeah. They're not even shitting. They've got seas full of shit in Wales. Wales are nailing it.
Yeah, they are. And it, like when I'm not being booed by farmers, whenever the Welsh people in the audience, they get yes, we're using our food bins. What's your problem, people from England? And,
well,
but it is,
right.
And some of it is councils, and some of it is like, you know, not corruption. Well, could be, but could you know, be. Councils get stuck in 10 or 20 year contracts, and then it's hard for them to change things. But if you do have, like, there are people on my street who don't use their food bin.
Well,
and I'm
I
just
hope
like,
there's,
why
we're in
not?
My garden, and I hope there's no one on my street that isn't using their food bin. But again, like, to put the positive spin on it, I'd been, like, trying to avoid food waste. I have some disgusting meals to eat things up.
My dad says it's better to be ill than waste it.
And oh, well, I don't know.
No,
that.
It's so stupid.
Yeah,
because then you end up
sense.
A day... I mean, pretty much everyone in my family has at one point been ill.
Really ill.
Because they were following Duncan's advice. And it's like, but you're wasting time, you're tasting energy, you're making everybody sick.
Also...
And he never lets up on it.
Oh, no.
Never.
Duncan. Let up on it. But now that I've learned from you what incredible things, well, not just from you, because we are recording now in my home in Lewisham, and Lewisham Council are currently having a massive drive to get more people to use their food bins, and they sent out an email that really succinctly explained why. And I was like, I've learnt this thing twice in like a month, and that's amazing. First from you, then from them. So the word's getting out there.
Presumably your partner's a nice normal person.
Yeah. Oh, I will get there. I'm chipping away. No, she will every now and again, like, basically I get an eye roll, but I am, if I find
also,
a banana skin in the normal bin, there's a conversation. I don't let it go.
So it's like you don't need to be a saint. It goes in all the time, and you know, we all waste food every now and then, but I just feel like it's one of the easy things. If it's in the corner of your kitchen.
Well, and you can feel smug about it. That's a positive thing I was going to bring back to. If that's going to create more energy. I've been feeling guilty about even the food I put in there because I didn't eat it.
Yeah.
But I think, well, no. There's no point eating beyond fullness, no point eating something that has gone a bit off. If it goes in there, we're all right, actually.
And it's so interesting about beyond fullness because, you know, you were probably brought up the same way as me. Like, you have to finish the food
up
on your plate. And then...
But never get fat.
Yes. But then, you know, oh, by the way, your icons growing up are going to be Pamela Anderson and Kate Moss. So good luck with that.
Yes.
And so I feel like... And I'm watching my friends, you know, not bother with that. And I think that's becoming a healthier... way to eat. So it's a really good example how we're balancing concern for the environment with
self-love. But self-respect and being able to trust our bodies a bit more on that front. Like,
I mean,
go, well, I'm hungry and what for? And if I'm hungry for, actually, I might be hungry for sugar and I really need a carb, or being able to learn to listen to your body and stop when you want to stop. And
I'm going to really use that, like, trying to combine love for the environment with self-love, because it sort of comes back to the end, towards the end of the book, where you talk about avocado anxiety and that meme, you know, the guy who criticised millennials for eating avocado and toast rather than buying a house. But what he really hated about them is the fact that they were sitting there with all their self-love and love of the environment. And I just always felt that was a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
Let's take that pot. Is that such a bad thing?
No, exactly.
I think these things can actually can be combined for good.
Quick fire questions.
Tell me about anything food-wise that you've won as a prize or were given as a gift.
I mean, I often, now I'm friends with everybody at the allotment. Okay. But if I go there, I come back with loads of random vegetables and they're all really muddy. And it's great, but it's quite hard work. Cause
it's
then,
hard
you
to
know,
go through it all sometimes,
hard,
isn't it?
So I get given a lot of random muddy vegetables.
That is lovely. Last year, my friend Caroline turned up at my birthday drinks in a pub with a big marrow.
Brilliant.
Yeah, just wanted to shift it. Have you ever tried eating upside down?
Ooh, almost certainly. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Great. If there was no other option, would you eat a person?
Well, in my ethical carnivore book...
Oh, yeah.
You know... There was a woman I interviewed who talked much about placenta, about eating a placenta.
Oh, fuck. Then I went on and I put a bit of in my mouth.
Sorry. And then I went on and I had a kid. And you know when you do all the hypnobirthing nonsense, which is wonderful for some people and good luck. But for most of us, it doesn't turn out like that.
Yeah.
And when you're planning your birth and you're like, maybe I'll... I was like, I'm not sure about the placenta, but maybe I will. You know, because I had this image, I'd just be floating in a pool feeling really happy. And you just you don't really have the energy or time to think about placentas and eating them and because I was like when I get to the hospital I'll say to them, can I take it home and bury it under a tree?
Those were not the words you were saying were go buy some drugs actually in the end.
It was like, let me home. So I would have eaten my placenta. That wasn't the question, it was other people,
loved it,
wasn't
though.
It?
No, we've learned more about you than we have about
I don't want to eat horses, you see.
So you'd be quicker to eat a friend than a horse.
Oh, but just don't want to eat either, Jess.
Oh.
I just think the horse question, because lots of people like it would make... I've eaten roadkill and lots of random stuff for my last book.
Yes, I remember, yes.
But I feel like... I think it's really interesting cultural association. So I'm... don't want to eat horse and I don't want to eat dogs because they're kind of my friends.
But too busy kissing them and loving them.
Exactly, but they're not that different from pigs and cows.
Yeah.
Now it's time for the big end question.
A volcano and a tornado have a baby called a vornado, and even though it sounds really cool, it's a big, disgusting bastard which throws lava around at a million miles an hour. It's terrible, but luckily, it's all agreed to have never happened if you, and weirdly, it does have to be you, Louise, agree to shuck 2,500 oysters, all whilst shuckling, a beautiful Jewish word that I've learnt recently in passing, which means to sway back and forth very vigorously during prayer. And the praying you're doing is out loud, so no one can give you any snacks, as you imagine. This is an epic task. In fact, it sounds impossible, but you do it. You're a hero. You've saved us all from the tornado. Your reward is a place in history for all time, as like a godlike figure. But your reward in the moment is the feast of your dreams. And you are peckish, because it took many hours, if not a day or two, to get through that many oysters whilst shuckling. You're the happiest and hungriest you could ever imagine being. This is like you're in a point of elation.
All those oysters, I think I'd have to eat some.
Yes.
I do love oysters. I think they're really good oysters.
Are they?
I think I'd have some really cold champagne and eat a couple of oysters with Tabasco and lemon.
Oh, My favourite.
To start. And then what would I do after that? See, after that, I think I'd probably want to settle down with something quite hot. A feast. I think I'd actually like something quite bready.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a pie.
Yeah.
And in my pie, I'd have steak and kidney, because I like a bit waffle.
Oh, yummy.
So that's steak and kidney pie. Yeah. And I'd have with it new potatoes and butter and I'd have red wine.
Yum, yum.
And I'd have it chosen by someone continental.
Right.
You know when you go on, you know when you have like one of those outdoor feasts in France and you drink lots of wine, it makes you feel good. You don't know how they've done it. So I'd have a massive carafe of that.
Yeah.
And then I'd have pavlova with fresh figs.
Whoa, yummy!
Which basically an old lady told me about once, and I've been thinking about it ever since. I've never had it. On a French Riviera, and I met a very posh old lady, and I don't know why we got talking, but we talked about this pavlova she'd had once with fresh figs.
And you've never had it, you've just
And I've never
about
had it.
It,
and I'd have a nice pudding wine with that, a very cold nice. Pudding wine.
Oh, what great and answers. Then I knew you'd have great answers.
Coffee, and then, you know, go to sleep.
Yeah, you're allowed. You can do what you like then.
Yeah.
You're a god.
Hoovering Podcast.
God, I loved that conversation. How full of amazing stuff was that? I wish we'd had longer. I implore you to grab a copy of her book. It's called Avocado Anxiety. I also found her earlier book, The Ethical Carnivore, massively educational. And both of them are just so well written, like really accessible and engaging. And despite not sort of holding any punches, positive and empowering too. She's on Instagram as at Lou B. Gray. It's LoubGray. Thanks for listening. Keep sending your funny and fascinating answers to our listener questions as well, won't you? I love them. Tickets to all my live stand-up as ever are on my website, jessicafostercute.com. Keep an eye on all the work in progresses I'm doing. And also soon now, I will be releasing tickets for a great big juicy brand new 2024 tour show. Follow us on social media at The Hoovering Pod. I'm on at Jessica Fostercue. Send us voice notes, pictures, WhatsApps to 07462 855 271. Email us, thehooveringpod@gmail.com. I'll be storing all your beautiful offerings up and discussing them in future episodes. Keep an eye on our social media for any specific questions and topics that we'll be asking you to contact us about. Links to everything interesting mentioned today are, as ever, in the podcast notes. Hoovering is presented and created by me, Jessica Fostercue. The music is by Jake Yap, and it was produced by Laura Grimshaw. Until in 2 weeks, happy hoovering.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.